Hi, I'm Josh, and cop without a badge, glass up in my vag, beauty and the feast.
Bonjour, 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 bonjour.
Boy.
There's Belle. Is she walking funny?
This is terrible. This is all.
Yes, it's awful. It's nothing good at all.
All of this is wrong. We should feel bad. We
no
are bad.
No one likes like bad. Gaston. No.
Okay. Hi. fuck. I'm Matt, obviously. And this entire intro so far has made my brain itch.
Not fair enough.
I invoked the short.
You do. Yeah, you do.
Let's see here. This is Charlie Dunn. This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. I don't know. I was going to try to make some kind of Faust joke, but like that ruled. Like that was just,
he did.
It was so goddamn. I'm just like, man. So just make a Faustian bargain and we'll like discover more rad, weird, half naked woman, demon flying shit everywhere, violent 1927 silent movies. Like that's awesome. Bring them on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will meet them with Mephisto Fury. And this is Harsho Hot Dog.
Oh, you.
So hi, to begin with, this week we wanted to talk about a short called Itch or Picard, Jean-Luc Picard, just Picard. This is a 5-minute long short that to me just has like glee of like joy of creation and just appetite for grossness in spades. You know, super simple guy says he doesn't need bug spray as he's sitting outside with his paramour and gets bit and proceeds to scratch and scratch and scratch until he pokes his fingers through his arm and is finally then at peace, you know, having addressed the itch. And then just the perfect little button of an ending on the end of it. So yeah, this is super fun, and those effects are gross.
Yeah, they're icky.
Yeah,
good
this
sound.
Is, yeah, short and sweet, and just kind of like, either you're on board for this year or not, I was. So I suggested we watch it. So yeah.
It's silly, but it's not that too silly that is starting to bug me about some of the more indulgent ones. Like the one with the ladies who did the fishing on the men-only lake, whatever.
Oh, see, I liked that. Yeah, but you're right. There is a different
time
tone
that got
there.
Really grating to me. Oh, by the way, Jess and I are watching through the, I think it's Beyond the Dark or something mm-hmm. like that. On
Beyond the Dark.
Which is like just a package of shorts on Shudder.
Oh.
And we watched that weird one about the lobster baby.
Mm-hmm.
That Malacastrada, I think.
Yeah.
And
That's
another one that hits that, like, this is way too broad kind of thing. And, you know, gross, awesome baby notwithstanding. But this one, no. Like, this is, it's understated. Like, the guy is, you get that he's kind of a smug prick, but in a very low-key way. Like, oh, you would probably still go to a party with him, you know?
Yeah.
And
he would. He would be the guy that, not perhaps fully foreign to any of us, might roll up to a party with a pun or dad joke.
What? Like,
you know, maybe he would be that guy. I don't know what that's
maybe
like.
Maybe he
at
would
all.
Instruct you that it's pronounced catchy.
Yes, quite.
So, yeah, this is fun. People should watch it if they can. If you're into gore, you'll enjoy it. If you have trouble with gore,
it's gory.
It's gory, but it is quite short.
Yeah. Although it was cute and fun. So yeah, I'd say watch it.
Short.
The only thing that I wish it would have addressed was like, as he's like with his arm and his mouth, like just tearing parts of his arm apart. I couldn't help but wonder what she was reading.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. She was very engrossed in that book. Engrossed. Get it? Gross.
Because yeah. Like I could be looking at something and like out of the corner of my eye, Joe can do something and I'm like aware of activity at my periphery. And I go like, I should look over there. Like in this scenario, like he gets just like violently flailing at his arm and ripping and flailing and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, at no point does she go, honey.
Like, isn't that sort of the entirety of British comedy?
Yeah, to a point, I guess.
I mean isn't that just like, Fawlty Towers or Mr. Bean or whatever? You're just flailing around doing this insanity while someone else is like, oh dear, I need to butter the lummox. Or whatever it might be.
You hit him on the head.
I just kind of felt like he ceased to exist as soon as he refused the bug spray. And she tries twice, and then she's like, okay.
All right, you're left to your own.
Yeah, go get bit, man. Whatever, I got my, romance novel or whatever.
So I would have, another thing I guess I would have liked is I would have loved to zoom out to like near to a nearby tree, like two mosquitoes are like talking to each other, not unlike the little gnome guys in the short gnomes, where they're like talking to each other, like did you just hear that? Guy didn't put any bug spray on, like, ah, well, I'll fucking get him. Like, just like some little like, weird, like, I don't know, something.
Crunch time.
You want to ascribe malice to the insects.
Well, yeah, and then also, like, to have them do, like, but they have it be much like the gremlins, where, like, they're flying towards them going, da 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 da. Kind of great. And then also, I guess it was like, I'm not familiar with the ways of nature, because, like, why are they sitting in the middle of a goddamn field? Like, what the fuck are you, why? That's, ugh.
Some people think that's a way to spend a day.
People like outside. It's okay.
It's really dumb. I don't know.
It's like it's just the in worst. The middle of the, it's like there's no shade even, and like, oh, for crying out loud.
That I don't understand. Yeah, I would be under a tree.
Yeah, that was the thing I didn't get. It was just like, said,
and I would want to be near a body of water if I was just going to hang out outside, like.
Yeah.
If I want to just sit in grass, I can do that in my backyard. And it has.
Yeah, that does sound dumb. Poop. That's bad.
Right. Hey man, come sit in my grass. It's got poop. Good. Anyway, so Itch, yeah. Why don't you watch it? I feel like it should be called Scratch, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's that whole debate, right? Like, I think it might be one of those localisms where do you call it you're itching as the action to relieve the sensation or you're scratching to relieve an itch? Mm-hmm.
Are you incorrect or correct?
Well, and that's, the way everyone thinks
language
of it.
Language is prescriptive.
Yeah.
It's descriptive, not prescriptive. But at the same time, like, that one just gets so up under my skin. Like, the first time Jess said it when we've been together for, like, 6 months, it's like, I need you to stop doing that because I really think that this relationship could go somewhere and I can't.
And that's how you knew she was the one, because she tolerated that bullshit.
Yeah, she did not just go, well,
fuck then, off.
Yeah, go fuck yourself inside
go
out.
Go fuck a dictionary. Yeah.
for some reason, the phrasing just made me think of that Tim mentioned line about the thing. And he's like, it's like, I read a study that said that 48 to 53% of Americans do not believe in evolution. And then another 40-something percent of Americans believe in evolution, but that God is controlling it or is a caretaker of it, which leaves a very small percentage of Americans who are right. God bless Tim Minchin. I love that guy.
It's also in the Midwest. They say, like, I borrowed you a sweater.
I hate that so much.
Instead of I loaned you a sweater. And that's the exact same error, right? Or, thing.
Yeah, I think so.
It's the same kind of construction, which makes me wonder. Welcome to the Horror Show Linguistics Podcast.
This is the real horror. This is your everyday horror.
Irregardless.
I should have been a linguist.
I do love that Slaughterhouse Princess has a running gag of whenever someone says regardless, Brett loudly corrects them to irregardless.
That's excellent.
Makes me laugh every time.
That's funny.
Irregardless.
Technically, it's pronounced nuclear. Realtor.
It's actually fort. It's your
nuclear
fort.
Realtor. Yeah. Anyway, Charlie, though, spent a decent chunk of time watching cool movies and hobnobbing with cool people.
So he did.
He went to Fantastic Fest. Charlie, I demand a full report.
Well, yes, I will. I'll give it. Yeah, the first thing to report is that it's been a few years since I've been, so I really missed it. And I was really good to go. However, because we age and everything else, like I can't like two of the days I did the old five movie shuffle, and I was like, yeah, it's not a thing. So like, there was definitely a handful of the days where like, look at the stuff that's the last slot of the day. I'm like, seen three of those, and then the other two, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go home. I'm just like, and then there was one morning that was that way too. I was like, I'm still pretty whooped. Like, I could just nope out of this and then be fine. And like, I'm not going to be held to account that I didn't utilize every single slot every single day. So I was like, I think I'm going to go ahead and not do that. So it's, you know, so it's not, in years past, I've done like what, like 28 or 30 or 31 mm-hmm. or whatever. I was like, this time I'm like, we're not getting to that threshold anymore. But it's just sort of like, you know, it still was a really enjoyable time. It was, they did a lot of renovations that they like literally were finishing the day of the start of the festival. Cool. And so like, there wasn't that they took most of the lobby and turned it into another theater. Like actually just a normal big theater, which means there wasn't really like much of a lobby, but it's like kind of a hallway. And like the hallway, they kind of fashioned into like a bunch of Kubricky kind of things. Like they have a pod bay door thing, like with a HAL bit on there. And then they have the elevators from The Shining, and they have like a bunch of doors that all have 237 on them. If you look through the peephole, you can look in and you can see, there's no room there, but like somehow with the magic of something, you look in there and there's like pictures from The Shining, like the bathroom and like the bar and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So you look through these little people and I was like, this is really nifty. So they did all that kind of stuff. So no lobby. And of course, you know, because we were just not ever going to stop having summer around here, it was hot as fuck. And so you had to sit outside being really sweaty. So that was like, it was, you know, logistically speaking, it was like, not the best in the world, but you know, they can't be blamed for global warming necessarily. So anyway, there was the opening night movie was the Legendary Pictures produced, Macon Blair directed, Toxic Avenger, starring Peter Dinklage, in the titular role, yeah. Which was wild. Cause you're like, wow, what? It's like, this will be interesting. And there was a Kevin Bacon's in there as well. And anyway, it's they really did a good job of balancing. They did a really good job of balancing enough trauma flavoring without it being like so trauma where you're like, oh, yep, like I was describing when I was talking to people after that, I was like garlic salt. Where I said like, if you season what you're cooking with a garlic salt, like a little bit in there, I'm like, that's good. If you just like take a handful of garlic salt and shove it in your mouth, it's too much garlic salt.
That's a good metaphor. I'm going to start using that.
Cause for trauma, it definitely worked for trauma. It's yeah. like, you know, a little bit of flavoring. It works. Okay. And so they got, I think Macon understood you got to get a little bit of trauma in there, but not so much so that you're just like, it's just everything is that kind of like awkward, shrill, noisy, draggy kind of thing, you know? So he did a good job of bringing in enough trauma to like feel good about that. And then a lot of little Easter eggs, like the newscast in the background, the backdrop behind the newscasters is that old Trauma Entertainment, like menu thing, like with the city skyline with the little spotlights. That's like behind them as like the backdrop of the news. Take little things like that. We're like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, like, that's pleasant. So, but it's fun. Peter Dinklage is, I mean, that guy's just so magnetic and like just so enjoyable to watch and everything. And he was really good at it. They basically kind of bring in a little bit of like an ecological kind of terror thing too, like not just being toxic waste, but it's more just sort of like, it's like this company that manufactures stuff that's supposed to be like wellness products or whatever, but like it's actually like not so much that. But it was fun. It was like, you just have to, you calibrate yourself for like action kind of splattery nutty thing, and you're like, and it's a lot of fun. Like it's a fun adventure kind of thing. Looks really great. And like I said, Peter Dinklage is awesome. So that was our opening night one. So I really liked that. I thought it was really, really, really fun. So I just wanted to highlight a few things. My favorite movie of the festival, it was close, but I edged out one. I kind of knew going in that was going to be at the top of my list anyway, but I just exceeded every expectation, was Alex De La Iglesia's new one called Four is a Crowd. And it's like you know, I'm sure I brought it up many times in the past, but like, you know, Preston Sturges, I love the old Preston, you know, Sullivan's Travels and Palm Beach Story. Just like that kind of slapsticky, high-minded thing where it just goes, just pop, 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 and it's like a slow kettle build, and I love that kind of thing if it's executed really well. And a few of us, like myself and Mark and whoever else, we're talking about afterwards, like if you're wanting to make like something very endearing and heartfelt but slapstick and kind of like high energy comedy wise, if you were to watch this movie, you'd be like, why the fuck should I bother? Because like which I know this thing got mean spirited, but basically it's just like it's this guy who's like straight laced dude, and he's been like doing ride shares. Or like kind of doing carpooling rather between Barcelona and Madrid, and he's been giving rides to this woman who spends the weekend with her family in Madrid, her parents, and she's like a little bit younger than him, but they've kind of developed a sort of friendship and stuff. And so at the beginning of the movie, he's like practicing what he's going to say because he's developed feelings for her, and he thinks that she may have had feelings for him too, and so this or whatever. He's trying to come up with a thing. And Josh, just for the user part of it, like, you know, like, you know, it's like one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. He has this thing like, you know, like the first time I saw you with the striped suitcase and waiting, and I knew you would have, they'd be important and this thing, whatever else. But he keeps fumbling over the words. He's like, when I saw you, you were striped and there was a suitcase when I carried you. And it's like, oh no, there's this whole, so right at the beginning, you're like, okay. And so basically, like, it's through this service that they do the carpooling, and so he's got one other passenger in the car, and then he has who he describes, he thinks is going to be like a overweight sort of IT guy, is going to keep to himself, and then whatever, because he wants to be able to talk to this lady about him having feelings for the lady. So the business guy they pick up is this absolute classic, fantastic, scheming kind of guy, and he's like always got like nine things going. Like he can get you a really good deal on Yugoslavian running shoes, and you know, like he's also got something else going, and just an absolute, like, if he could have been the anthropomorphic fox, like he would, that would have been perfect, like kind of like the fox from like Peter Pinocchio, whatever. And then they go to pick up the IT guy, who he's expecting to be this dumpy sort of keeping himself guy. And it's like this like really good looking, blue-eyed, dark-haired, Spaniard-looking guy. And he's got a guitar with him. And he's like, you are not this guy. And he's like, oh, no, it's my cousin's account. I use my cousin's account. Or else he's like, oh, shit. And so like his plan to profess his feelings just gets derailed little by little by little, and it just keeps escalating to the next thing, escalating. They get into there's an altercation at a filling station because the CAD guy doesn't want to pay the minimum to use a card so he can buy a bag of chips, and turns into this like fight where there's a thing where they leave the CAD guy by the side of the road, and then they find him, and he's at this extremely fancy hotel where he's like swimming with three women in their indoor pool, and he's like, hey guys, and like, and it just goes and builds, and our guy is just, it's like that third act Tom Hanks freak out where like at some point he's just gonna lose it, and it's just sort of like it just builds and builds. But what I love about it, it's not just like the lady's not a prize to be won, because she has her own agency and she has her own self-worth, and she actually has feelings for this guy too. It's just sort of like, because they've really developed this really positive relationship, but the way that he's acting and stuff and this jealousy things and all this stuff, it's like, and so just on top of everything else, and you've got this like drug trafficking person who's after the, it just goes, it goes, it goes, and builds, and it's just more and more ludicrous, but just so contained and controlled and beautifully put together and funny, and just it's fucking rules. It was just awesome. I love that movie very, very much. So that was my favorite of the festival. In terms of horror related stuff, there's just a couple things I really wanted to highlight, which was there's one called What You Wish For, which has got Nick Stahl in it. Nick Stahl of Carnival and other things fame. It's a guy who is kind of working kind of a shit job at a shit restaurant and a shit motel at an airport kind of a thing. He and this other guy went to culinary school together. The other guy has like reached out to him like, hey, to reconnect after, you know, 10, 12 years, and like gets him a plane ticket to fly down to some tropical location or to visit him. And so the friend, Nick Stahl's coming to visit, has been like, he works for this agency and he gets flown around the world cooking for like super rich people. They fly in this place and then he like cooks his meals and whatever else, and he just makes like just ridiculous amounts of money. Nick Stahl is like, look at this, like, yeah, you get this, it's pretty great. And he's like, yeah, well, yeah, I guess. And very early on, you're like, well, obviously the secret ingredient is people. And as it turns out, that is true. And they let you on. But what's funny is the audience learns that well before Nick Stahl does. So it's great because it's like he's just about a half step slow. And then basically, like, the friend he's coming to visit pretty early on in the movie, like, he's just, they kind of befriend this woman who's like this Australian woman who's like a tourist, and they kind of hang out with her. She kind of strikes up a little bit of romance with the guy that Nick Stahl's visiting, and they kind of make plans to hang out again. But the chef guy is like really having a lot of basically difficulty and guilt. And so through the course of it, you learn that Nick Stahl's character is like in pretty bad with like a bunch of people he's taking loans out from, and he can't pay back, and they're kind of out for him and to get their money back and whatever. So anyway, the friend guy has too much with the guilt, kills himself. And they're at the property where this meal is supposed to take place in a few days. And so he realizes that he has access to friends, like accounts and stuff like that, realizes that like I can, if I just, I mean, I'm trained just like he is. If I just cook this meal, these people coming to arrange the thing don't know me. They don't know what I look like. They don't know what he looks like. I can just get a fake ID. I can get a few, I can get a couple things set up here. Take kind of take the role of this, perform this thing, make a few $100,000, and then I'm good. Hmm. And then the helper, the kind of the coordinator people show up, and then it's very evident pretty early on there. You're like, oh yeah, secret ingredients, absolutely people. And it's like, and finally Nick Stahl kind of gets, and but what's funny is you kind of go like, well, wouldn't you just run at that point? And that's sort of like, but they kind of very quickly sort of explain that like, yeah, there's not like, there's no leaving, like that's not a thing. So just like, you're well trained, you know what to do, let's just do it. And it's just like, and so it's basically like, and so they have to like scout out they scout out the ingredient in town, you know, and it would take a long time to explain the whole thing. But basically like the coordinator lady is, this lady's name is Imogen something or other. She's really, really good. And then the other helper guy, and like, they just kind of like, they're just kind of like, everything's very pedestrian. Like, it's just sort of like another job. They've got another one in Kenya in a month. They've got another one in Stockholm in 6 months. And like, they just kind of, they send these helpers around to like coordinate these things with the ultra rich people that pay a few million dollars a person to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a, you know, whatever. And so basically realizing he's got no way out, he kind of just has to go along with it. And so then the middle act of the second and third act becomes, as I described to many people at the festival, I was like, it's the most fucked up version of It's a Living. Like, it's just like, and you get this intrigue with like the ingredient that they've selected, having some connection to the sheriff from the next town over, who's visiting in town for like a bar mitzvah, the guy or a baptism, and the guy who they select as the ingredient turns out to be the child who's going to be baptism father. Oops, picked the wrong person. And so it just kind of leads some additional intrigue and some additional things. And so it's very, very dark humor, but it's never played for, like, it's never like asks you to laugh. You just find yourself like slapping your forehead and going, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, I just laughed at that. And like, oi. God sakes, you know, so it's not a lot of that, you know, and so, but it's expertly written, very well written, and just keeps you on edge just enough to where it's not like cloying where you get the big release and you're going to go, okay, fine. But it's clever and it's interesting. And even though you know what the secret is very early on, watching this thing come together is a real treat. So What You Wish For is awesome. And then there's two real quick ones I want to touch on. One's called You're Not Me, and the other one's called Property. These were You're Not Me is one that was set in Spain, and I've been trying to think about how to talk about it briefly without giving a lot of stuff away. But I feel like if you see anything related to You're Not Me as whenever it's going to come out, it's going to say secret cult, or it's going to say something cult related. So just There's a cult component to it. But you remember that one that we watched with Barbara Hershey where like they're going to move the lady to the old folks home, and the old folks are like, well, we found this thing where we can suck out somebody's life force, and if they're going to die anyway, They're not using their life force.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you think? And she's like, you know, you make a good point.
Fuck getting old. Fine.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is kind of so, so You're Not Me has got, an interesting, it asks some of those kind of questions. And much like, so early on, you know, like many times when there's like a cult, like a Wicker Man type situation or whatever, where early on people are acting weird, you're like, why are they acting weird? And then later on you get explained to why they're acting weird. This one has that, but there's the way in which the parents are acting. Basically, you have a daughter and the daughter's wife and their adopted child are coming home for the holidays, but they're coming like a week early because the daughter wants to surprise the family. They show up and they're like, you're not supposed to be here. And they're like, what's a surprise? And they're like, that's not whatever. And so as it turns out, they're having this like kind of event. And the parents are acting weird. Parents' friends are acting weird. You're like, okay, this is kind of odd. And so they, as it goes along, they're like, you're just like really getting a sense like, what in the hell is going on? The parents have sort of adopted this sort of local refugee woman that was like kind of like seeking shelter in town. And they went through the process of like adopting her. And they treat this adopted girl like much better than her actual daughter. And you're like, what in the hell is up with that? Meanwhile, like all the family party guests are starting to arrive. And they're too interested in the daughter and wife's adopted child who's from like Senegal. Mm-hmm. And at one point they referred to him as a chocolate bonbon, which is just the entire audience went, ooh, he's just like, oh, God damn it. And so anyway, like, you know, something's up, you know, there's a cult component to it. But what's fascinating is like, you go through the justification, you go through the this, you go through that. And it really does like, it's a fascinating thing. Like you're like, oh yeah, they are wrong for doing these things. And you're like, sure. But like a lot of bad shit's done in the name of a thing that's not so bad shit. So like, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And like, you still, I don't know. Depending on your, like, I have a very strong embarrassment factor thing. Like I get really like watching like The Office or some Christopher Guest movies. I'm like, whoa, mm-hmm. It's really tough because it's really tough for me. But like, this has some of those moments that are very awkward and uncomfortable. But as it starts to build into the third act, it's like there's a lot of clever shit that's there that I found to be kind of unique and interesting. So that one I really dug. I thought was really great. And then Property is set in Brazil. And you have this kind of very fancy, spancy pants family who the wife of them is like some kind of public figure of some level of fame. And she endured some kind of assault or attack or something like that. And so basically like the family is sort of like relocating out of their town apartment. The idea being like there's just too many threats, there's too much danger. And they're going to relocate out to this property, this farm that their family owns. And it's like a working farm. And they're going to like relocate out there out in the country this whole bit. And so anyway, long story short, like the dad, the husband guy has been, he's got this brand new vehicle that they've armored to make sure she feels extra comfortable. Like they go through the whole process of armoring the thing and whatever. So they get out there and the word was supposed to have gotten to the workers that this farm has not been profitable in many years. So it's going to be repurposed into like a hotel essentially. And the workers are like, no, but we own this. This belongs to us. And they're like, no, it super doesn't. And this is our property. And we've been floating it for many years. It's not been profitable. We can't keep it going unless we repurpose it into something else. And like, well, but no, we own a part of this. And it's like, no, you super don't. And so basically like things devolve really quickly to where you basically have all the workers kind of rising up to kind of like, we will take ownership of this and like dispatch some people. There's some murdering happening and a lot of misunderstandings about like something, like one guy that someone gets injured, like critically injured, and it's like, well, they're blaming the family. It's like, well, we know that didn't happen, but you know how mob sort of mentality goes. And so it escalates. And so our lady, in the effort of trying to escaping, gets the vehicle. The vehicle is like a super automated thing. She barely knows how to operate it. She gets in there, locks it in there. They realize that she's in there. And then they're trying to get her out of there, but it's like this armored vehicle, basically. And so like, so she's like safe, sort of. But then they're kind of the process of trying to get her out of it. And then it's sort of like, and then it's just this endurance test. Cool. And what I loved about it was that like, it's, initially, you're like, it's kind of like an eat the rich type of thing. But at least my takeaway, and I'm pretty pro-union labor kind of person generally, and this situation is like, oh, no, fuck the workers. Like, they're 100% wrong. And it's sort of like, but then you kind of go along and you go like, well, I get it emotionally. I get where they're coming from emotionally. But like, it's that thing where, you know, ultimately, you know, once you once you return fire, you're kind of like, it's not so good. And so ultimately I did kind of get to where I was like, I felt like, okay, I can get where they're coming from, but they're not right in the scenario. And they've killed people to this thing that they don't actually have any right to. And So I just asked some very tough, kind of interesting questions about like what the ownership class, what ownership class actually means, and like what these things mean. And it's harrowing and dark and like just a real feel bad movie. So that was, those two were really high up on the list. There's a Korean one called Killing Romance, which Matt, you will hate, Josh, you will love, about this lady who was like this big celebrity, makes a bad makes a bad choice about starring in this thing, this like sci-fi movie that's like the biggest sci-fi movie ever made. It's financially successful, but everybody thinks it's a joke, so she goes into hiding. Hook marries this kind of like this environmentalist, but he's like all of his companies like screw up the planet more, and so anyway, she kind of goes into hiding, kind of brought out of hiding to maybe try to do a new project by their next door neighbor who's a big fan of hers. And I could spend another 45 minutes describing it. It's bonkers. It's wildly creative and interesting and funny, and just it's like there's certain kinds of Korean movies like this that are like too much, and they're just too loud and too bright and too like just too much, and this is just understands that and just doesn't do any of that. It's still fun, energetic, and super creative and wild, and the music and the choreography and the sets and just this one damn thing after the other, flying ostriches at one point. Anyway, it's fucking wild. Yeah, I know. But it's really wild and a really, really enjoyable time. Like I said, Matt, you would not like it so much.
Fair enough.
And then I got to see the premiere of The Creator, and I really liked it a lot. I know some people have been mixed on it, but I thought it was really good. First two episodes of The Fall of the House of Usher from Mike Flanagan. Mm-hmm. First one's a little talky, and then you kind of get things set up. By the second end of the second episode, you would probably, by the end of the second episode, go, motherfuck goddamn Mike Flanagan. How the, with the, whew. So yeah, I'm eager to see the rest of it. I'm really looking forward to that. And then just a couple of little last ones here. Deep Dark was a Moroccan Belgian deal about these miners in the 50s. Mm. And it's essentially like a little bit of The Descent, kind of a component to it, where basically like they're having to like speed up the mining process and then uncover this underground. It kind of a Lovecraftian sort of a deal where you're like, you know, it's literally like the stone door with the writing on it. It's like you move that and there's this big fuck off thing with like wings and tentacles, and it's like, oh, this is not so good. It's mostly lit with those lights on the helmets. So like, and which could have looked really dumb and awful, but it was really, really expertly made. I could have used like a little less the monster, but otherwise like it's shot so well and for not a lot of budget, and it has a great look to it. It was pretty terrific that way. Speaking of Lovecraftian things, Suitable Flesh, which is Joe Lynch's new one with Heather Graham, who doesn't fucking age, and Barbara's in there, among other people. It's what you expect. It was basically, it was supposed to be Stuart Gordon's last movie. He was working on this, and then, of course, he passed away. And then they basically, the people that are producing it, along with Stuart and Stuart's wife, who's a lovely person too, they basically were like, there's a handful of filmmakers that we've worked with that we feel comfortable with. And, you know, so they kind of basically reached out to Joe and to want to see if he wanted to do it. And, which is really cool. And I like Joe a lot. I like Joe Lynch a lot. He's a cool guy. But anywho, this one is like the best way I can describe it. And I don't have to say much more than this is like, if you were to, like, you're going to make a Lovecraft story, but you're going to make it like late 90s Cinemax Lovecraft story. That's kind of the pitch. Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, all that implies, it's sort of. Yeah,
as an OG perv, I'm here for it.
Yeah. So you can,
I can actually picture it better than I should probably be willing to.
Yeah. No, it's, and you can, it's what you're picturing. Yeah. It's, I mean, you're, that's kind of. You're over the age of 35, and it's, you get the angle that he's going for, where it becomes a little bit outlandish, a little bit over the top, but it's, you know, and it's fun, and it's fun to watch. Barbara's in another one, so she's really good in this. She's also really good. She has a minor role in one of my other favorite movies that I didn't really touch on, but Last Stop in Yuma County, which guy's first feature, which is, just seems patently unfair. It's basically like there's a bank robbery, and you have this guy stopping to get gas in this like rural place. There's no gas. They're waiting for the truck to get there. So you have to wait in the diner. The only person working at the diner is Jocelyn Donahue. And so then, like, as people go to get gas, they're like, oh, no gas, waiting for the truck. They just kind of pilfer in there. And you come to figure out that two of the guys that are there have robbed a bank nearby. Mm. And so, like, they're trying to, like, suss out if they're going to be found out or not. And it's just fucking masterful. But but Barbara plays a small role as, like, the secretary for the sheriff. And it's just, like, she's just made for it. It's great. She's not in it for, like, a whole lot, but it's really enjoyable. That movie, definitely, Last Stop in Yuma County, whenever that becomes available, like, all the people must see that because it was so wonderfully made. And what I really love is that it does that thing where you go, like, okay, moral standing, like, well, kind of make a decision. So it is awesome. It's really, really good. And then it's super fast. There's Something in the Barn, which is another one of the Nordic, the kind of lore around the barn elves. Like, uh-huh. This is basically like Martin Starr and lady too attractive to be Martin Starr's wife are relocating to Norway because they inherited this house. We see in the prologue why they're inheriting this house, because his, his distant uncle pissed off the barn elves, and the barn elves, once they get fed up, they're gonna end you. And so we see that he gets ended, and then they fast forward a year later, Martin Starr and family go there to relocate, kind of have a fresh start to get this new house they've inherited. And so they hear the lore about the barn elves, and the youngest boy kind of takes it to heart, is trying to follow the rules for the barn elves, and then the rest of the family just is not really following the rules. Mm-hmm. And basically at a certain point, he pissed the barn elf off so bad that not only is he going to wreak vengeance, but he goes, and in come just fuck tons of them. And then it becomes a cross between like Critters and Krampus and Gremlins. And it's even though it's kind of madcap and nutty, and I really enjoyed it, I thought it was cool, it feels like a step slow at times, like a little bit. And I'm very eager to watch it again because I did see it late at night and it was on like day 5 or 6. So like, I wonder if that's my fault and not the movies, but it's still a lot of fun, and it's great fun to watch these barn elves just wreck shop on people. It's super enjoyable. The guys who did, 1984 and Turbo Kid has one called We Are Zombies. I really wish I would have liked it, but I didn't really enjoy it very much. It's okay. It's not boring. It's just there's a lot of asking for the laugh kind of situations. Mm-hmm. They're like, don't be sidekick guy is just grated on my nerves from like the very beginning, and it's got a little less heart than I think it needed to have. So it wasn't bad. It was just sort of like I wanted to like it a lot more. And I already told you guys about the new Pet Cemetery. Like, it's great to look at. Its biggest time is just crime is just being very dull. Mm-hmm. There's an Indian kind of demon movie called Suburban Tale, which I had three movies this festival where one of the programmers, this guy Andrew, perfectly affable gentleman, I don't know when he writes descriptions of movies, I don't know what he's up to, because like this one he said, what if Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis was an Indian vampire or Indian werewolf movie? And you're like, damn, that sounds interesting. That's well, hard. There's no werewolf and the plot is not of Metamorphosis. So like, I don't know what he was thinking exactly, but it's like, it wasn't a bad movie. It was a first feature, but it was cool, different setting, different kind of cultural touchstones. So it was interesting. It was just, I was really set up to think it was something entirely different. And that was kind of a weird deal. There was one that I was really looking forward to called Bark that I was hoping was going to be good. This guy wakes up tied to a tree in the forest and kind of, you have to kind of suss out as to why. And then whatever else. Interesting setup, interesting premise. Third act is solid. Takes 9 hours to get there. And I sort of like, so like interesting premise, interesting thing, but it just kind of just took so long to get there. And then my least favorite as far as the features goes was the new VHS movie, VHS 85. Mm-hmm. I did not care for it really one bit. There was like one segment that I liked, and then it just got decreasingly just very difficult to deal with. And I just, anyway, it was just not. Some people like it. It's not for Charlie. And I came out of it just like kind of angry. And so it's sort of like, which I don't like. That's not really a fun thing. And then very, very lastly, I wanted to touch on two shorts. I watched two different blocks of shorts, which are a little bit subpar. But there was two that I wanted to touch on. One is in the shorts with legs category, which shorts with legs is like things that don't necessarily fit into other categories per se. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Drawn and Quartered. Drawn and Quartered is like things that are animated. Mm-hmm. So in Drawn and Quartered, there was one called A Bear Named Jesus. And the description is, as an indigenous man relates a story of his mom's abduction by a bunch of bears and subsequent conversion to fundamentalist Christianity. And it's done in stop motion. And so it's basically, he's telling this thing about this, about these bears that arrive, this bear named Jesus, and like, oh, we shouldn't be afraid of the bears, but the way the bears act, you should be afraid of them. And then you're trying to coexist with the bears, but the bears then kidnap their mother, and the mother converts, and he can't relate to his mom anymore because she only believes in one God, and we believe in many gods, and then, but the bears. And so it's like, it's total, almost like poetry. It's all, it's like a little, like freeforming at times. The animation is a little bit on the rough end of things, but I found it like incredibly compelling. I thought it was so interesting, and I want to listen, even not taking away from their animation, but I would like to watch it again, and just to hear the words. Like, I just was, the words themselves were really, really neat. And I was, like Sherman, like almost Sherman Alexie, or like Josh, do you remember the guy that used to do segments on This American Life from time to time? Just George Sherman? Not George Sherman. George Saunders. Yeah, George Saunders. There we go. American Indian fella. And it kind of reminded me of that, where it's like this beautiful prose. And anyway, that one was quite wild. And then in the other one, in Shorts with Legs, you remember, Josh, you sent us that thing, that skibidi guy with the head in the toilet. So let's say if you were to take that and you were then bringing a little bit of Aphex Twin, and then you're going to bring a little bit of Ministry, and then bring in a little Lawnmower Man, and bring a little bit of Serbian film, and also bring in a little bit of Cronenberg, then you would start to get to Drizzle in Johnson, directed by Ivan Lee. It's this guy, a scientist guy, looking for answers in this thing, trying to figure out these calculations, and then it just becomes this completely deconstructed, reconstructed, deconstructed thing where, like, you get brain genitals, and you get electromagnetic machines, and you get dicks falling from the sky, and you get, and that's just the milder stuff. But it looks somewhat like that skibidi thing, and like has that look to it, but feels like a little like a Lawnmower Man, like Cronenberg. I could just start naming off things until I would get to the point where I'd be like, you run out of words at a certain point with this fucking bug nuts thing. It was I've never seen anything like it. Exactly. It's in, you know, I've seen a lot of shit, and like Drizzle and Johnson is like, I could say good, but like, wow, it was a thing. So I don't know if that'll ever be available online or like who knows, but I could just keep naming off things, and you'd be like, that seems outlandish. I'm like, yes, everything about this thing. At a certain point, he gets like a brain vagina, and he's like putting his hand and his fingers in there, and he's like trying to get up with like the calculation ideas. Anyway, it's done in animation style that kind of reminds me of a skibidi thing, but it's like a little bit three-dimensional in its rendering. Mm-hmm. Just an intense kind of experience. It was really, really wild. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. There was one last thing that I thought you guys would really like. That there was one called The Feast, which this week. And it was these guys, these three students from Chile who did this. And it's like, it's that stop motion animation thing where they're like animating on things in a three dimensional space. Like Wolf House. Remember Wolf House? Where?
Awesome. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. So I watched that one. It was very compelling, and I was like, wow, this is so fascinating, and the creativity, and it's something else. So later on in that day, when I was in for Fall House for Usher, I looked down my row, and two seats over, I was like, oh, it's those Chilean guys, the two women and the guy. And I'm like, I leaned over and said, hey, I really liked your short. I'm like, oh, thank you. And so I just ended up shooting the shit with them for like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, the guy who directed Wolf House was an advisor on their film, and teaches at their cinematographaga school in Chile. And so like he, in particular, that masking tape stacking thing the up and down that thing. I was like, there's a bit in this one where it has that. I'm like, it reminded me of this movie called Wolf House. I don't know if you, and they're like, oh, you know, funny that you would say their English was fabulous. They were trying, they were just trying so hard to communicate. They wanted to speak a lot faster than they could. So sometimes it took us a minute to figure out what each other were saying. Sure. We got there. But they're like, but he was an advisor and worked with them on the film, and they really loved him and really admired him and everything. I forgot, totally forgot about that. Yeah, Feast was a really terrific and interesting thing, and I kind of connected with them to make sure we kind of stay in contact to see what else they come up with, these three, because these two women and this dude, and they were just wonderful Chilean, wonderful folks from Chile that were first time in the States, first time in Texas, and then in Austin, and I had to advise them that, like, Austin is a little bit of an oasis, just, you know, just before Warren's, like,
get in before sundown. Werewolf.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've had people visit here before, like, you know, the guys from Wormwood, where they were like, oh, we want to go like South Padre Island and go to this thing, go to that thing. I'm like, well, for one thing, that's 7-8 hours away. And then for two, you really don't want to go to West Texas because it gets real rural.
It's a different country.
It's a different everything. And like, and if you're warning someone from Australia, like, that really tells you something. But the Feast was really cool. Simon Boucher, Claudia Saldivia, and Amanda Riviera were these three Chilean folks that I just thought so much of. They were so lovely and sweet, and they made a really nifty little short that I thought was awesome. So, anyway, that was a lot of Charlie talking. I'm sorry, that was a little longer than I expected it to be.
It's good to hear about everything that you saw, because
indeed
now I am very happy to see some of these things and a little bit bummed at the ones that I'm now sad to see.
But I am taking notes.
Now we know.
Yeah.
Before we get super in, because I don't think we're going to have tons to say about these movies, let's take our break now if we want to.
Let's.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I think we can kind of just kind of brief them. I don't think it's going to be a ton.
In our easy breezy way.
Cover girl. Okay, bye. So let's talk about the first feast, or El Banquete, also known as The Feast, which makes sense.
Unpronounceable in Welsh.
Yeah, as is everything. This is in Welsh, and not since I watched that Hungarian movie have I been just so in awe of how a language does not sound to me like language. And there will be the occasional loan word, you know, that pops up, and that makes it even weirder. But yeah, strange ass language is the Welsh. No offense, Welsh people, your language is super strange.
A lot of the like British Isles stuff, like Irish sounds cool, Welsh sounds cool, Gaelic sounds cool. They're just so different, and it's just, they're neat. Yeah, but they are incomprehensible.
Well, it's funny too, Josh.
Nary a cognate.
Well, when this thing came up, I was interesting because, you know, I've been watching the series on FX, the Welcome to Wrexham, the series about, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Rob Beckham.
Oh yeah,
and which has been really wonderful, and I highly recommend it to like anybody. It's just been really, really enjoyable because it's about soccer, yeah, I guess, but like mainly it's just about like, you know, kind of a community of people, like a really community of good people, and like these are, and just sort of like how that, you know, when you realize these things, you ultimately have like a very, very strong responsibility to like be who you are or say you are, and like live up to your expectations and stuff, and what community really means, and like also what representation means, because like there's people in the town that like, there's one lady who's like bound to a wheelchair, and they figure out that they really need to improve things in terms of like accessibility to the stadium, so like they make her the head of that, and like they, and then that kind of brings up some civic pride and stuff, and so just little things like that that just like really exemplify why it's not really about soccer as much as it is about like kind of a lot of other stuff. And it's really, really great, but it's in Wales. And so like they have some of the signs that have all that click on stuff on there. And then you're sort of
like three D's in a row.
Yeah. You're like, that has 53 letters. That has 53 letters that sign does. And like, what does that say? Like pharmacy, like, terrific. So like when this came up, when this was going on the movie, Joshua, I was like listening to the lady speak at the very beginning. And I was like, wait a minute, that kind of vaguely rings a bell. And I looked it up, like, oh yeah, there you go. That's that Welsh language where you almost recognize a word, and you're like, oh, I think I know it. You're like, nope, no fucking clue.
No, this next one has LWDDYNWLC. And somehow
pronounce it. The comprehensibility of this particular film, language barrier as your first hurdle then is sort of just mid-tempo crazy right from the start. Like, you just are, like, introduced to people who are not doing what the humans do in their own particular flavor. And we just watched them all. Man, did you guys... Did this thing take place over one night, which I believe is what is supposed to have happened, yes?
This movie?
Or, yeah, or say a week, considering how often they'll be in, like, I'm going to go chop some vegetables. Oh, dear, I'm going to go do this. And so while someone's busy, two other characters just wander off in the woods for a while and then pop back in to finish chopping vegetables. And it's like, has it been an hour or has it been 6 minutes? How did they have time to do the other thing? It's just, it's so dreamlike that it just seems to happen that anything that needs to happen conveniently happens, but it is really disorienting. And like, that's kind of your 1-2-3 punch of, wow, this is bonkers. That, all that said though, I kind of like it.
Yeah. Like, we start with, this seeming non sequitur of like a guy at an oil field who collapses and there's blood pouring out of his ears, and it, his ears are ringing in the most frustrating way. But then quickly we start to hang out with these like rich Welsh dudes. We've got the politician husband who's clearly like a politician. Yeah, on the take, on the make. His wife and like two basically useless sons. One of them has gotten fired from his job at the hospital because he's been assaulting his unconscious patients and is now trying to train for a triathlon. And the other is a recovering drug addict who is in the family like the black sheep, but probably the most decent of them.
At least recovering seems like a strong term.
Right.
He's a pretty active drug addict.
Struggling.
Hang on. Trying not to do any drugs in the presence of his parents, basically.
Right.
Into this walks our hero, Katie, who is going to be helping out as they prepare a feast for the evening. At first, I thought this was going to be a, like, getting revenge on rich people by the poor people kind of thing. It turns out it has weirder shit on its mind than that. I will point out, the way that we encountered this was Jess and I were looking for movies to show in her class. And she's like, we were looking for specific international movies from specific spots. And like, okay, so this fits the bill. Let's check out the parent guide. And they're like, there is a sex scene, but it's cut short because the woman has glass shoved in her vagina. And we're like, clearly this is not something that children need to see, but
would you like to know more? Something
we need to see. Yeah. So that's why we watched it. And it takes a long time. And there were points at which you're like, this is going to drive Matt crazy. Because they keep talking to her and she doesn't say anything.
It does drive me nuts. And it makes that, perfect sense.
It's that thing.
Yeah.
I thought that same exact thing. I'm like, oh, I turned to Kristen. Kristen was working on sewing. And I turned to Kristen. I'm like, it's like, oh, this is going to make Matt lose a goddamn mind. And then say stuff to her. She would kind of like cock her head slightly and then just wander off. Like, oh, Matt is going to lose it.
Yeah. I mean, I stand by my statement. If anyone did that to me in my house, I'd be like, you need to answer me or get out. Like, we're not having this. We're not playing charades. I'm having dinner. Charades comes after dinner.
So we slowly learn the oil derricks are because this family has been making extra money by licensing the mineral rights to their farmland. And they are trying to convince neighbors to do the same. And part of neighbors' land is this place called The Rise. And we just get the, like, you know, we don't even let our kids go up on The Rise. Like, that's where she sleeps. And we're like, oh, yeah. She, all right. And we eventually find out that the police found a car with Katie's body in it in a pond. And that is not Katie that has been in the house this whole time. And then it's just like Earth Goddess kind of tearing through this whole family in various, you know, getting her revenge and derailing their plans in various ways. And it's a slow burn, so slow that at times it seems like it's gone out. But by the end of it, I was on the edge of my seat with it. So that's why I recommended it. It wasn't just a masochism watch for me.
It's yeah, but that's the thing, is I don't think it ends up being one of those things where you kind of force yourself to sit through it. And I think all the shit we mentioned up top about how weird it is and the added layer of the language means that, like, you're kind of on the back foot right from the start. Mm-hmm. And at least for me, you know, with anything where I'm watching subtitles, I'm assuming, well, I'm always watching subtitles, but where I also can't speak the same language, I'm giving it a lot of extra leeway going, I might just not understand the tone of this correctly or the cultural references. Mm-hmm. So give it some time. And by the time I kind of had let that buffer expire, I was invested enough in all the weirdness and kind of going, oh shit, like, I think it's about to go down. When it does go down, it's very rewarding. That you get to play, I thought it worked really well.
You get to play that fun game that is this abnormal behavior or is it European behavior? Because the culture is, you know, three clicks to the left of what we're used to. And so we end up with, like, the guy wearing the weird Speedo suit and exercising. For a while you go, is he? That's a weird thing to be wearing and a weird thing to be doing. Like, nope, turns out that's just what they wear to do a triathlon there. It's super weird.
Oh, is it really?
I mean, it seems like when he was putting it on, I was like, oh, so he's like some kind of latex fetish guy. And
just, I assumed it was
his workout clothes. Got it.
Yeah, but I also assume there's an element of that of him just being a perv, like, and going, I could just wear sweatpants. You know, that's that whole thing where you watch people that like to, like, ride their bike for exercise and they wear all the spandex gear. Mm-hmm. That doesn't, like, do anything for you. If you're trying to exercise, wearing clothes that has more drag would actually be beneficial to make you work harder to get better exercise. Like, yeah. It's, you know, you're not on the Tour de France here, Leonard. You know, you work at the post office. Leonard. And so I assumed that was just him being like, check out my bod. Everyone wants to check out my bod, which seems like it would fit in with his character. So.
Yeah. And it's like all of the people are just various degrees of shitty throughout this. And the joy is watching once you realize that this lady is there to just fuck them up. Like, to me, that was where the joy came in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the main thing is this. Yeah, at times the speed is real slow, and so it was like, and it wasn't ever like boring to look at per se, because a lot of it was very, you know, it was very artfully done and it had an interesting kind of intrigue to it. But at times it's sort of like. It definitely has like kind of like a, like, there's that shot where she's like looking in the bathroom and he's like, I'm going to get out of the bathtub and shave my nuts. And you're like, okay, this is getting into that like art house thing that really I have a strong allergy to. Like, ugh. But thankfully they don't linger there too long. And then you just kind of go along. I love the land developer guy just being like, you could not have like caricatured a more sleazeball looking like kind of like, thinks he's like kind of high society, but he's just sort of like he's just a scummy sort of brick. And so it you know, as it never loses me entirely, but I spent so much of it just going like, if we could just have one normal fucker in this whole thing. Yeah. And then finally it's the neighbor lady.
Yeah,
the neighbor lady is like, oh, she's from Earth. And yeah. It's like ah, finally, like an anchor, like it's connected to the ground. And then it's sort of like, and then basically you just gotta, you can sort of set about the task of like just start dispatching all these, this whole crew. And yeah, there are definitely some squeaky moments for sure. And it was, you know, I don't know. It also, I mean, like, I don't think this is very fair, but I was thinking like, it did kind of remind me of a few of those movies where, you know, you have a lot of buildup and then it's a full psychotic break for like the last 15 minutes. Like a, was it Audition or that Scissors one from many years ago, where it's like, it's just like
Scissors one.
I don't know if we ever actually did it. It was
Inside.
No, not Inside. Oh, it's one
that would make a good answer to that though too.
Well, there's this one. I'll find it, not tonight, but I'll find the name of it. Yeah, it's this one. There's this lady who does this like kind of performance art thing, and she's a little bit, and I say this with affection, but a little goofy in the head, and she through her art, she kind of works with her therapy and stuff like that. And so basically, like, they took her life and she's in it, and she's trying to be quote unquote normal, but it's sort of like, you know, the normal world just sort of eventually abandons sort of wildly creative and disconnected with reality people. And then it's sort of like what happens when you kind of push that kind of person too far, like more an Etsy version of May, if that makes any sense. But like not a whole lot happens through most of the movie until you get to the end, and then it just goes completely off the rails.
Like a Peckinpah movie.
Yeah, where you just all of a sudden, poof, wah, you know. And so this had a little bit of that, but it was intriguing enough throughout that it didn't lose me entirely, but I was just, I was baffled by the lack of humans in it.
I did appreciate, though, that there was no big book of lore, and there was no, not even a name, really, for the entity. Like, to me, I only caught the phrase, that's where she lies sleeping, and we don't want her to wake.
I don't think there was ever a proper noun. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that is enough. That's creepy as hell, especially once we get, you know, the forest goddess and all her splendor just, you know, fucking dudes to death.
And that's very in line with folklore stuff of just the lady of the woods, or, you know, the great hunter or whatever. It's just doesn't matter. No one's ever walked up and talked to it. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
goddess or god?
That was a, are you going to look like Ziggy Stardust when we summon you?
Well, it almost has that Miyazaki feel of, like, where you get that thing of, like, there's just some completely fantastical nut bar thing that's occurring 10 feet over there. And as long as it doesn't come over here, I can keep doing whatever I'm doing. It'll do whatever it's doing.
And in fact, you wouldn't even see it if you looked right at it from over where you are.
Yeah, like, it is, this has that kind of feel to it where it's sort of like this. She's not, like, reclaiming the earth from all the humans. And, like, she's just, it's just specifically these assholes. And it's kind of like, and I kind of like that in a way. I like the, like, that there's not a bigger end game. It's just sort of like a.
Yeah, just territorial.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And it's like, that was kind of a, I think that was a good touch. And there wasn't, like, some, more lore or, like, some kind of bunch of, like, forest lady worshippers or, you know, something like that. It was, it's just kind of like a, you drilled in the wrong spot, and then you've woken her up and she's grumpy.
That's what all those G's and L's and D's in Welsh were for the hill. It's just the hill that shall not be fucked with. And that's all they had to know.
In the immortal words of Ron Perlman in Alien Resurrection, I am not the person with whom to fuck. Oh, Joss. Anyway, yeah, so for Feast, there's one of those that I was just kind of fascinated with. And it's like, I don't know if I love it.
Oh, do we need to rate the last one?
This is the first one.
Or I thought you said for Feast. I was thinking Feast instead of the Feast. Sorry.
This is just going to get worse.
We made this very complicated.
Okay. Faust, before we do that, never mind.
First thing's Faust.
Yeah, like, it's one of those where, like, I didn't love it and go raving about it. It was just, it stuck to my ribs, and I enjoyed just, like, chewing on it like a
cow
with cud, you know, like this.
Like a bit
this
of honey.
Fun stuff. Yeah, it's good. So, call it like a 7.5 out of 10, but definitely intriguing enough if you can handle the pace.
Yeah, I'll go just a titch higher and say 8. I think for much the same reason that, like, being gently baffled at the beginning and having, yes, my obligatory, why the hell isn't this person talking and no one's making a big deal? But the fact that everyone else was also an alien made it a little, it was couched in more normal. Well, not normal, but since everything was abnormal, it fit better. Hmm. So maybe I was more forgiving of it. But the, yeah, just like the payoff was weird and awesome. So I had a good time with that. So, yeah, 8 out of 10, the hills have eyes.
I guess, I mean, and not in a malicious way, but I'm going to kind of be the low man on the totem pole here. I'm going to say like 6.5, I think. I was going to say 6, but I more thought about some of the imagery and some of the shots. I think it's got enough going. I don't know. I guess I just kind of, I struggle just a little bit with, like, with the lack of humans. Because even the housewife lady is, like, she's she's kind of bonky, and it's sort of like, and then both the sons are just like, what the fuck are they? And then Weasel Guy, and then Dad, who's like, it's so funny. He presents as this like big bear, like alpha male guy, but he's like, he comes across like such a dweeb. Like he's like the biggest, burliest dweeb you ever seen. And you're just like, what is the deal with him?
Well, so I think it's the natural alpha male is desperately seeking approval.
Like I shot him. Like he's gonna say he shot him. Like I shot him. I shot two. You know, it's sort of like, it's like, so.
Like yeah, they're rabbits, dude, not polar bears.
Yeah, right. I mean, just like, the fuck down. Plopping and like, okay, that's all righty. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't like mad at it. I was just sort of more like baffled a lot of the time. And like I said, I could have just used for just a couple more humans, but otherwise, like yeah, very artfully done, and be interesting to see what else these folks do in the future. But it certainly had, it was compelling enough to, as Josh kind of put it out, like you know, compelling enough to kind of overcome its sort of slow timber.
Aaron Burr. Anyway. Well, let's hop to the other feast then. La otra banquete. You got to know going in, this was a movie that was made by first-time filmmakers who won a like documentary series called Project Greenlight back in the early aughts. Their director is Clu Gulager's grandson or son?
Yeah. Because Clue's in it.
Is why Clue shows up and is just the best of us. So my perception of this is colored by the fact that I just love that guy ever since he was like, I didn't think I was on a gay movie. Someone offered to give me a blowjob backstage, but I just figured boys will be boys. Oh. So love him. But so this has some quirks to it for sure, and has that like late 90s, early aughts kind of the meta thing going on where, you know, it has everybody introduced with a freeze frame and some stats about
them. Little Chiron.
Yeah, like little jokes that pop up in those. And but at the same time, we do have just a pretty straightforward monster movie where bunch of people trapped in a bar, big ass monster proceeds to tear through most of them, who will survive and what will be left of them, and Henry Rollins.
Yeah. And Judah Freelander, which I'd totally forgotten.
Just kind of chilling.
Oh, what's her? Krista Allen's in this too. Like she's like, it was just like, kind of, it was like, and then Balthazar Getty. That's the one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like okay, like cool. Of course, why not? Why would you not be in this movie?
I mean, and like, then just Jason Mewes in there for a while as himself.
Yeah, probably because Project Greenlight wasn't that Matt and Ben's thing. So probably they just hooked him up with the role. Like, put our buddy in this movie. He needs. Oh, he's trying to get clean.
Yeah, keep him out of trouble, pretty much.
Yeah, he's got to get clean so they can.
I don't know if this is before or after him sobering up, but probably before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the little like name tags and pithy descriptions of Doom is sort of like the warning bell of like, yes, this will be very 90s, and not in the cool scream way, which is like, admittedly, you know, ironic and whatever, and a little too cool for itself sometimes. But for a creature feature is like a style of horror film I really dig. And I feel like this one kind of, and it's probably partially because it's a new director, doesn't have the same fun I would expect if you made really the same script in the 80s, which I think would just be like, it would just have, it'd be more open and warmer and would just have a sense of sort of fun to it. You know, it makes me think like Tremors or Pumpkinhead, you know, and like those are kind of big, dumb monster movies and they sort of work. And it's like, this is a big, dumb monster movie, but it's got to be so dark and cropped so closely and the camera's got to jerk all over the fucking place. It was just nauseating. And it's like, ah, damn it. Like, sadly, this is where like we've gotten through like the first few rounds of like Doom and Quake and other first person shooters showing us how to like watch a horror movie from first person perspective, and it doesn't really work yet. And like, it just, it feels like it's somewhere between like the evolution of like really broad old school film techniques in used in horror in the 80s, and then transferring to like what's newer people were doing once you get maybe another 10 years in the future. And we're stuck in this like where you can just instantly recognize from the film stock anything made in the 90s. And it's just doesn't, it just kind of comes off as not dull, but somehow like you, maybe like slick, you just kind of slide right off of it. And it doesn't really like stick with me. I don't know. That's my two cents.
It's about as deep as a saucer, but it's got, it's the glee of the filmmaking that like, God damn it, we're making a movie. Like, get me another gallon of Karo syrup. Let's do this shit. And it, to me, that instead of dark, it felt like cheeky almost. Like, here's this kid, and there's like his, you know, life expectancy is one of everybody's stats. And it's like, hopefully a long, long time. And they just fucking murder that kid so soon in there. And not in a way that it feels like we should, to me, like internalize the death and feel really bad about it. It's just like, nope, fuck that kid. And off we go. So I just felt like once they put the gas on this, it just keeps going. The beginning scenes are slow, and partially because they have that odious boss character who just exists to say horrible shit and do horrible shit. And as soon as he gets a little more de-influenced, the better. And as soon as he gets killed, the even better.
Yeah.
So that took me a little while. I was like, this is that try hard tone with the shitty guy. And then like, but then once people just start getting nommed on, then it's fun. You know, like, I think the mission statement is just having the hero come in the beginning and either come with me if you want to live and then just get eaten. Like, and we talked about that being called out in
delightfully silly.
Quantum of the Dead, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so this has a lot of
blast with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like, I think it is definitely one of those ones that you have to, you definitely have to, you know, you have to calibrate yourself to just what they're going for. Like they're not really trying to necessarily even scare, you know, to scare you or to, you know, this is not, you know, I mean, there's some parts where you're like, oh, but it's sort of like,
it's a fuck. Yeah. Not a no fuck.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, like I think about Toby Wilkins' movie, you know, brilliant movie Splinter. And like that one is a lot of fun and like a popcorn kind of adventure, but it's also like, Jesus, like it is also like thrilling in that kind of like, you know, threatening kind of way, whereas this one more plays like just kind of like woohoo, and that's kind of more the tone, and that's perfectly okay. There's nothing wrong with that at all, but it's like it's. I don't think you if you were calibrating yourself to a much more like a thrill ride in the sense that like I feel like very scared and like oh, but I'm really invested in having fun kind of thing. That's this. Whereas like if you're dialed in more of like I feel like mortal danger and like I'm really nervous. This is not that. You know, it's not. This is not that kind of a. This is not this that kind of a thing. And the writing's a little broad at times, and I don't know that it's gonna age super great with some of the writing. But you know, on the overall, I think it's a fun time.
Yeah, I liked the just anything that Rollins does as an actor. I think is just fun because he is so not an actor. He is just Henry Rollins.
He is just him
in the world, and. He's doing like the sincere face that he does, and that's fun. And then he has his whole big speech about how he's got this big plan, and he just like goes outside to do his thing. And they go, "Did he make it?" And then they see that the monsters are now using him as a battering ram to get in the bar. It's like, nope, guess he didn't. And that's just it. Like, that's fun. So yeah, like you can't take it too seriously, and I wouldn't put this on for like a sit on the couch and watch a movie with spouse. It's more of a like, if I somehow was able to have an adult Halloween party, that might be on a TV.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see it for something like that where you could just tune in and out.
Let me see my Letterboxd score on that.
It definitely has that thing of like, you know, when I've been to like punk or metal shows and they've got something on the television behind the bar. This is that.
You get a lot of Evil Dead 2.
Oh yeah, for sure. That was their tone touchstone. I was like, yeah, it feels like it's kind of going for that gleeful kind of mess. And it's like, and God bless them for that. I mean, that's cool. Because I mean, like, was it the one before this one or the one after this? For Project Greenlight, where they did that Stolen Summer, which is like the child abuse one. It's like, I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one. I think it was the second one, because I think this was the first year, and they did that one, and it's just sort of like, it's like, not nearly as fun of a series that second season of Project Greenlight.
This has like, I don't know, just more people should use practical effects and monsters.
Yeah, that's cool.
They're fun. I really like the monster design because it's just teeth and more teeth and then some teeth. But they're also smart and they just keep getting smarter throughout, and that's fun too. So, yeah, it's not a great film by any chance, but it's fun to watch. I would say like a 6.5 out of 10 in the smile.
Yeah, the this one, see, as much as the last film, The Feast, was like weird and some people might feel the time in that feast, this one is the one where I was like really having trouble staying focused and like starting to dick around on my phone. Even despite being like, oh, look, it's this person and that person, that would only perk me up for a short time. So like it is what it is. It didn't blow my socks off. So I'm going to say like, it's like a 4.5 out of 10, Henry's Rollins.
Henry's Rollins.
Yeah. I'm all, you know, of course I'm always, you know, anything that's got Henry in it, I'm always going to be a good mark for, because, you know, it's like, I'm one of my great heroes of my life, you know, it's like, but actor is not necessarily one of the high things on his list.
Yeah, it's good for a very specific thing.
What was the one that he did? You Killed Me, or not You Killed Me? He Never Died.
He Never Dies.
Yeah. And I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was
it, you know, suited his talents.
Yeah, it's like when you put Eminem in a movie as a rapper.
Yeah. You know, he did well as the like SWAT leader in Bad Boys 2.
Yeah. I was just thinking the same thing. He's just like,
whatever that weird one is. Think this thing. And the Flea and Christy Swanson.
Oh, The Chase.
Yeah.
He's great in that. Yeah. But again, you make him a madman authority figure. You're like, yeah, I get it.
Like, yeah, that works.
That works.
And I always, whenever I think of him in movies, I always think of that story he tells about being in like West Texas. Maybe he was shooting this one. I don't know. But they, have all the makeup on, going back to the hotel after this like 14-hour day, and just like laying down on his bed and just being like, if I could just get up to go down to the gym, I could get the workout in. I could just get up. And he just gets up and goes down there and he's like doing the workout, whatever else. People are kind of like looking at him kind of weird, like, what the fuck are you looking at, whatever else. Then he realizes going back up, he's got like layer upon layer upon layer of like this, like, you know, like stage makeup essentially. And it's just sort of like, he's like, I just look like this like weird fading tattooed like burly Queen guy. I always think of that, like, it's just like what that must have looked like to some random person in the gym. But I find this fun. I mean, it's dumb as a bag of hammers, but it's fun. It's fun enough. I mean, and I've not, since the second and third one came out, I mean, I remember seeing them. I got in my head and couldn't tell you one damn thing about them.
I think I maybe saw the second one, but I couldn't. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you a damn thing. But like I said, I mean, I think it's entertaining and fun enough as it is, and it's a fun little capsule of a certain time and place as far as filmmaking goes. So, you know, it's fine. So I would say 6.5. I'd say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. the little skull fucking monster. I was just like,
God, I forgot about that guy.
Out of 10.
Every time you have like a rawr monster, you do need a little hammer, hammer, hammer monster.
So. Yeah, it's like death metal bands.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say that. They announced, I think it's yesterday or today, that next year there's going to be a, you know, they'll have Maryland Death Fest as like one of the storied, like historic kind of festivals for a lot of underground kind of death metal and doom metal and stuff like that. And, Justice's older brother and his brother-in-law go to Maryland Death Fest in New York City. They live in that part of Pennsylvania. They go down there and they go every year. But then, so this a couple days ago, they announced that they're going to do an Austin one next year, next April. And I was like, and there's one band called Tombold that I actually pretty kind of dig. And so I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. And but they're like, oh yeah, here's the opening, here's the first band. So you look at all the things, you're like, I can't read those things. Like, do you have them written in English by chance?
Yeah.
I came here to see Harold
Hall. Yeah.
And you're probably right. They're from Norway. They got 6 albums and ate a baby.
Well, Ate a Baby was the thing that the crossover thing they did with Kylie Minogue, which was kind of a mixed bag, I guess.
Yeah. The remix is Regurgitated Baby.
Yes. Yeah, I just can't get it out of my head.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you. I was like 2 steps away from that. Like, I can see it in the distance. I'm like, I know it's there somewhere.
We're all reaching for that low-hanging fruit. Yeah, Josh got there first.
The sweetest.
Mine is a steel trap.
That's all right. Yeah. Mine is rusted. So let's finish up then and just push ahead.
We're at midnight.
We got to let it all hang out. So let's talk about Faust. Silent movie by F.W. Murnau, also known for perhaps his film called Nosferatu.
Yes.
I will point out that I watched a version of this that was called the Vaporwave or Synthwave horror
version.
And that was described as it's been tinted and it has been given a Synthwave soundtrack. And like that is shit that I like, stuff that sounds like a Super Nintendo score. I don't know. I just dig it. You know, that Turbo Kid score kind of thing. But what it was just like playing a playlist of synthwave songs that had nothing to do with the action on screen. So it wasn't rescored. It was just accompanied by. And the color changes were just completely, like, mostly unmotivated. Like the first time the devil shows up, everything turns green and stays shades of green for a while. And then it shades of pink, shades of orange. And yeah, it's not like they went in and did like blue for night and yellow.
And there are like old black and white films that were intentionally tinted. I think they did that with Nosferatu and I think Cabinet of Caligari.
That was kind of what I was expecting was like blue. And yellow.
Although I prefer them in straight black and white myself. Yeah.
So even, I will say, even watching it with all of that shit happening, I was just struck by how freaking cool this thing is. Like, if you start with the Horsemen of the Apocalypse riding out in just glorious puppet form.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Way cool.
Metal as fuck, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we are introduced to Mephisto, who is just the hammiest Vincent Price times 12 guy, and then just really amazing turn of the century effects start happening, and like, yeah, this held my attention pretty sturdily for the entire run of it.
Well, and you start to, you know, I don't know if you guys had this at all. This was, you know, what, 1926? And like the thing I kept thinking of is I kept thinking of Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney and then Gordon Dick Smith. And I kept thinking about these people later on the reason why they had or had the makeup and things that they had was because they like figured out how to make them. Because there wasn't like a state, you know, we sort of forget that, you know, once you get into Tom Savini territory and he's inventing shit and Nicotero and those and all that and Howard Berger and those guys, like, you know, they were inventing shit and figuring out new ways to do things, but they also had many, many years behind them. Whereas like, you know, this time of thing, you mentioned the Mephisto character, Josh, I was thinking like, it's like, yeah, but what the hell do they paint him with? Because I don't know.
Asbestos.
Just asbestos and lead juice. Yeah. Just like, and then some of the apparatuses and the
colloidal silver.
And it just, but it keeps going and you're like, and many times I felt like even slightly distracted being like, what, how did they make this thing? Like, how did they build that thing? Like, my goodness, it just, I don't know, I kept being struck by that just because of the age of the thing.
What's wild is I bet if they're, you know, if in such a universe that a director's commentary for this thing existed, I bet not a word would be spoken about all that, because that was just so not, you know what I mean? Like, that would be the kind of thing that was just kind of like building a set. Mm-hmm. It was just part of the work. It wasn't considered like the art it is now, because that took a lot of time to kind of gain legitimacy sort of as an art form. I mean, you look at like Lon Chaney having to do all his own makeup for stuff.
Oh yeah.
He was just the best guy to do it because he cared, you know?
Well, that's a story about, was it, is it a Phantom of the Opera or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where he kept bringing in this things from home because the thing that they had hurt was painful. And it hurt. And so he would just bring in these gauzy stuff with like little bits of paper and like cloth pulp and stuff and like layer them in such a way that you could recreate the thing again, but also wouldn't like cut into his skin pretty much. And it was like, that's the level of, yeah, the how well it was regarded. It was just sort of like, I don't know, whatever works. Like,
yeah. And actors were cattle too.
Yeah. Like, give a shit, yeah. You know, it's sort of like, and so that was the other thing as this thing goes along. I don't know if you guys are struck by this too, but this is like a cast of hundreds.
Oh
it's
yeah.
Like, and it's like that scene on the bridge with all the half-naked women with the sheets and the whole thing. And you're like, fuck, man. Like, this is like this huge set piece. The thing with all the revelers that they're running down the street and they're like, all that stuff. I mean, this
Fuck,
like,
there's that guy wrestling a bear. Like, which, by the way, in reading about this, there's multiple cuts of this. In some, it's a dude in a bear suit, and in some, it's a bear.
Hmm.
I saw the one where it's a bear. Nice. but I watched a 4K restoration on YouTube, which had a soundtrack that, if not like intended to have been with the movie, was subtle enough that it didn't matter. But
I think you must watch the one that I did. I thought the music worked good.
It was fine. Yeah. Like, it didn't have any like strong, like musical stings when something happened, but I also imagine that's probably true to form for that early.
Yeah.
Speaking of all the people, though, and like you look at like the crazy use of miniatures for cities and stuff, and these like alleys and stairwells and all this stuff these people are going through. I'm about halfway through watching this. I'm going, I have trouble picturing these people like hearing cut and then like going home.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't picture them as being actors in this movie. I can kind of just see them as what they are in this movie. I was really going like, how did they stop being in this world? It's so immersive and full in a way that, like, I mean, it stood out to me enough that I'm thinking about it now. You know, like, I don't think about that when I watch, you know, whatever the latest Marvel movie is. Like, yeah, you know, and then at the end of the day, they're like Quiznos or whatever. But now I was just like, dude, where does this throng of peasants stoning Faust, do they just go break and they all go get like a hot dog? That doesn't seem right. They can't just cross the set to where they're filming Miracle on 34th Street. That seems weird. Like, which is, you know, the power, I guess, of the world building that's done here, is that it is just so imaginative and lush. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, there's a transporting quality where you just really get sucked into what they're doing, mainly just because it's so audacious. And that's like, it's not just sort of like people standing in like a Victorian hallway or like a castle backdrop and just sort of talking at each other for 10 minutes on end.
It's not the like Errol Flynn era where there's one set in the middle of the castle that everything happens in.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen enough silent movies where you're just sort of like, just nothing happens. And it's just sort of like, like, I'm going to go over here and eat an apple. Like, oh no, but the apples are for my cousin. He is coming to betroth or something or other. And it's like, they must leave this vestibule at some point. Fuck's sake. But this is like one scene after another and set after another. And like, some of the shots are just absolutely legitimate.
I was trying to catch him reusing sets. And I think there's like one time where like, oh, I bet that's this from another angle, I think. But it does just look like everything is bespoke.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild.
Some of those shots, like the shot of Faust when he's like working on the formula thing, like that shot where he's just like that look of pain on his face and the way that it's lit. And it's just like, God, it's just, I don't know. I was very taken with the whole thing. Like, and just like, just, and I know the story of Faust and know the whole thing, but it's just like, there's a magic to this thing. It was really quite the experience to watching this, because like other times, other silent films, like there's definitely some ones that, you know, like the Black Carriage, I really think is terrific, and like the old Dark House, And then you fast forward a little bit later on, the big budget action movie like Wings with Clara Bow and things like that. Like, those are all super interesting. Like, this is a different animal. Like, it's a different kind of a thing. And just like at certain points, just like, how did they get away with any of this kind of stuff? I was like, well, it's kind of pre-giving a shit. Like you said, the actors are sort of cattle. Like, there had to have been, well, it must have been a rough production.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It was interesting, yeah, when he telling. Became the young Faust. I was like,
because our devil transforms too. Then,
yeah, I was like, you turned him into Gene Wilder.
Yeah, he becomes
possibly
like
Paul Rubens.
I thought Satan just became like the devil by way of Titus Andronicus. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just got this like fabulous outfit with a very long feathered hat, and I was like, the devil, the weirdly, as hammy as it all is, it doesn't, he never plays the expression I expect him to play for his stuff, because he doesn't do a lot of the like snarling sneery stuff. It's much more like yeah. And you're like, oh, was that just like more insidious and like threatening in 1927, or are the devil's ways subtle? I don't know, but it was just like
subtle.
Sure, but like compared to like, you know, fire and brimstone and like, sure, you know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm used to a more heavy metal album cover Satan. Mm-hmm. That this was like, oh, he's impish. Like, that's kind of cool. So I don't know. I actually really liked watching him just kind of flounce around and do his thing.
Well, and just and there's so memorable, the shot of the angel and the devil, just that thing of like, what about the wager kind of a thing? He's just sort of like, well, do tell. Like, how about you lower your big ass fucking sword? Like, okay, I guess. And it's just like those scenes, like, because they're played big, they're all vaudevillian in that way, but it's sort of like, it's still so interesting. It's just, I don't know, I can't get over like how compelling the whole damn thing was. I was very taken with the whole thing. I was, what an experience this was to watch. And what would be really neat would be able to see something that was very well restored, like perfectly well restored, like, you know, where the title cards and the dialogue cards and stuff are even sharpened up. And because it was funny, you know, Josh, I don't know if yours had this experience, but the one that Matt and I watched, you have the big fuck off black backgrounded big things all in the German, but then you also have the captions below it.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that was funny just by itself. Like,
yeah. I liked trying to look up and see if I could correlate words.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I was doing that a bit too. Yeah, it was just funny. But yeah, what a wild experience that was. So it's really cool. Maybe,
it is. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be a hard sell to get people to watch this, but I am going to recommend people watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll die on that hill.
Yeah, cause cool. I was surprised to see, like, looking at the runtime, that it has like 90 plus minute runtime.
Yeah.
And I was like, how am I going to handle that for 90 minutes? Like, nope, this is absolutely compelling front to back. So yeah, it's got better cinematography than Triumph of the Will and a lot less objectionable story.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like,
what was your scale there? Triumph of the Will on one end and Birth of a Nation on the other?
That would be like a horseshoe, though.
It's a bell curve, and those are the bell ends. Yes. Thank you. I'll be here all night.
Oh, you rapscallion, and you.
This has been your bellwether report. no denying she's a funny girl. So I would say for this one, just give it a watch. It's neat. It's, I would say, like an 8 out of 10 sort of, but it's so far removed from any modern cinema experience. It seems weird to rate it, but there you go. 8.5.
I think. Yeah, it's going to be probably tough to convince people to watch this, but I'd say if nothing else, tune in and just watch a little hunk of it just to get a feel for it. Because it is just strange how compelling even these really long, slow moments where like Faust will have a realization of just kind of despair. And it's just this guy kind of staring down into the right and sort of slowly crumbling to the side a little bit. And you're just enraptured by this. And it's like, fucking, this has been 30 seconds now. And like, that's all he's done. And I'm like, yes, more, please. It's really, really neat. It is an odd duck in our particular sea of geese, but yeah, I'll say, I think you nailed it about right there, Josh. Like, I'll say 8 out of 10, to give it some conceits, some concessions from modern filmmaking to, you know, it, but, yeah, it's wild. It's awesome. Check it out.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be the high man on the top, but I'm just going to go just a touch higher. I'll be 8.5. The other one that really stuck in my head was I kept thinking of the Charles Laughton movie, Night of the Hunter, and like how it was like the one movie that he ever directed, which is wild to me. And it's like the starkness and the black and white of that very Bauhausian kind of like very German, extreme looking kind of things, but it's so artsy, but never is like boringly artsy. And like I kept thinking about Night of the Hunter, like how much I love that one so much. And it's like, why the hell didn't Charles Laughton get to make another thing? And it's like, well, he did it. He was too artsy. he did too much. And like in this one, it's sort of like it's one of those things that just does not look like anything else. And it's a fascinating piece of work. So I was like you two, I mean, I had the same kind of thing. I was just amazed at myself for being like super, like so like dialed into the thing. And it's just like, man, this is quite the experience. So yeah, I'll say 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10. I don't know. I can't even pick out a thing. That's a rolling hay. Yeah, I don't know. I would just say audacious but quiet but loud creativity. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with things to watch next time.
Yes, sir.
So next time we've got 3 movies that are available on your more common streaming services. 2 of them are new. 1 of them is not super new. We're watching No One Will Save You on Hulu. Spoiler alert, I've already seen it. It kicks ass.
Agreed.
I'm excited for you to watch it. We're also watching Totally Killer on Amazon Prime. It's another new one. And then we'll be watching Deadly Spawn, which is more of an 80s kind of joint. And that is on Shudder. So No One Will Save You, Totally Killer, Deadly Spawn. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I'll say a good night.
And for next week's episode, our short will be called Laboratory Conditions, or Laboratory Conditions, if you're so inclined. And hopefully by the time we record our next episode, both myself and Charlie will no longer have COVID and will sound more like ourselves. Well, because I can totally hear it in my voice. You sound pretty good, though, Charlie. So, yeah, with all that being said, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Yeah, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and drink fluids, get extra rest, and maybe I'm just projecting, but otherwise we'll
talk. I'll take that advice. Yeah, you go ahead.
Yeah, it's universal, really.
I'm off work till Saturday. This is great.
And let's see. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll talk towards you before we know it. Before you know it. Anybody will know. I mean, nobody knows nothing.
You ain't seen nothing, see?
Adios. Bye-bye.